Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast for February 11th, 2014. This is episode 51, and I'm J.D. Durant.
And I am Blake Bertuzet.
And on this week's show, Blake, we have no guest. It's just you and I this week, just the two hosts kind of holding down the fort for this week. We were supposed to have a guest, but due to some scheduling conflicts and some kind of delays, we're recording this a couple days later. And so it's just you and I this week, which should still be a lot of fun. And we're going to be reviewing George Clooney's latest movie, The Monuments Men. And going off of that, we're going to be talking about our top three actor-turned-director movies, which was a little bit of a hard one.
That's a big challenge right there. Yeah. It's going to be a blast like it always is. We've had a lot of challenges this week. I appreciate everybody out there bearing with us scheduling conflicts for myself and for our guest as well. So I'm looking forward to it still, though.
Yeah, should be pretty good. Moving on to our third segment, we're going to do a little bit of a February preview. And, of course, as usual, we're going to top off the show with films we've seen over the last week. But before we get into it, Blake, I know you're a little bit under the weather as of lately, but other than that, how was your week?
It's getting a whole lot better. It can only go up from here. You know that? And I don't know. We're not going to get into the review here a little bit here, but it's been since I saw this movie that I felt under the weather.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a coincidence or not.
You know, just took you down.
Exactly, exactly. So I'm starting to get my voice back now here. So yeah. Other than that here, it's been a decent week anyway. So how about you? Everything going well with the new job still?
Yeah, everything with the new job is going good. It's a little slow, but still going very well.
Right.
I'm excited. The Olympics are here, the Winter Olympics. Big hockey fan, so I'm ready for men's hockey to get
rolling. That's right. It starts tomorrow, doesn't it?
Yeah. So
I'm excited about that. I have a Russian coworker, actually, and we've actually been giving her a ton of crap over the last week about all the big media stuff with the hotels.
Sure.
I had to actually play her the clip from Family Guy about the bears and unicycles because she had no idea. So yeah,
Yeah, it should be pretty good. And yeah, I've heard a lot of analysis and a lot of people on TV are just talking about how hockey, men's hockey, is the big one.
Like
that's the granddaddy of them all for people in Russia. So they could care less if they medal at anything as long as they win hockey.
Yeah, hockey, and then, of course, figure skating is always a big one that I'm interested in. It's just that's more of the fun, you know, stuff there.
Should be good.
Definitely and hockey.
We can't, I mean, since we're talking about the Olympics and, you know, we talk about movies, we can't go without saying Jamaican bobsled team.
Right? Exactly. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, so.
I know, and I almost forgot about that here. I need to go back and watch Cool Runnings and Miracle.
Yeah, exactly. We've got to get it all amped up this week.
Exactly. I'm going to get John Candy and Kurt Russell on repeat here.
Yeah, it should be a pretty fun week, though, but. Outside of that, last thing I just want to say is we do have a new writer for the website, and his name is James Shaw, and you can follow him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @comedic_critic, and you can find him on our website as well, but he's doing a lot of reviews, and he'll probably do some featured blog posts and things like that coming up soon, but you can see all of his stuff up on our website, insessionfilm.com, so I just want to say welcome to James. Go follow him on Twitter. It's great to have him to be part of the team.
Good stuff.
We got a great show. Let's get into it.
Let's do.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 51. John Wayne. John Wayne.
Yeah? Yeah. John Wayne.
What's going on? This seems to be a bit of a problem.
A bit?
Here's the thought. We put down our guns. You go your way. We go our way. No hard feelings. He doesn't speak any English.
Not a word.
Okay.
You're just going to sit down?
Yeah, I think, why don't we all just sit down for a sec?
Okay.
John Wayne.
John Wayne.
All right, The Monuments Men is written and directed by George Clooney and stars George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, and a few other people as well. World War II, stolen art, Nazis. On the surface, it sounds pretty good, but what do you think about The Monuments Men?
Well, like you said, it sounds great on the surface, and especially, you know, it's a historic film based on a true story. It's Clooney doing that thing again. I'm thinking to myself, good night and good luck. You know, sure, it should sure. be perfect, especially with an ensemble cast like that. I'm thinking the Ocean series all over again as well. It should have been – it was the perfect recipe that just did not come out right in the kitchen to me.
Yeah.
There were a lot of great pieces to it. I think that there were some good elements to the story there, but there were a lot of them that, to me, just did not push the story forward. There was no real reason for them to be there. Yeah. Now, you can't take them out. I get that, because it's, you know, these are actual characters, actual people. So you can't deny them from being in the film.
Yes.
But specifically to me, like the characters played by John Goodman and Jean Desjardins.
Yeah.
While I like the actors a lot and a few lines they had here and there, their characters in the movie didn't really have much of an effect. I think that they split everybody apart too much. And and again, yeah, that's true. You can't get away from that in some extents there. To me, what the saving grace of the movie to me was Bill Murray and Bob Balaban's characters. Those two had great chemistry on screen, and there just wasn't enough of them.
Sure.
I think that if there was maybe a little bit more of that, that's where it really came together for me. But anytime in any movie, when you have to take the time to actually do a voiceover and explain to the audience exactly what's happening, then I think you've already failed.
Yeah.
And that was one of my biggest problems with that there. There just wasn't enough exposition in certain characters there. Cate Blanchett's character was good, and it made sense for a while, but I don't know. I'm ultimately left, like, I wanted so much more. I had such high expectations. And even though I watched the ratings kind of going downhill as we moved towards it, it's obvious that Paramount did not push it back out of award season for special effects.
Yeah.
I think three explosions in the entire movie.
Sure.
It was a big letdown for me. And I think maybe because I saw that cast and what I really wanted out of it, I expected more. So I don't know. I didn't hate it. I'll say that. but it never really decided what it wanted to be. I think, the score on it, it was appropriate at times, but also at times it seemed almost cartoonish, the same way the Nazis were kind of portrayed in it, were kind of outlandish and cartoonish and way overplayed. And so it had maybe too much of a comedic effect at times when it was really more of a dramatic story. And I think that the times when it wanted to be dramatic, it was too late to really explain it. So it just kind of really just all fell apart. I think that there would have been a lot to work with there, but it just kind of fell apart for me here. It was kind of in the middle.
Yeah, for me, I'm right there with you. This movie had a lot going with it on the surface, as we kind of touched on. I can only echo that sentiment that you were touching on. All the pieces to the formula seemed to be there. You know, I like George Clooney as a director for the most part. When you get this cast together, and even the story is fascinating on its own.
Right.
Just the idea of the Nazis stealing this art, and then there's this specific team that is put together to essentially save it and save the culture. And there's some great themes that you can play into that. And I'd say it's a relatively unknown story for the most part. I mean, when you think World War II, you're going to think stories like Saving Private Ryan, things like Band of Brothers. You're going to think those kinds of stories. And those are worth telling, don't get me wrong. But this is a really unique story that I think is worth telling. But Clooney, kind of like what you're saying, doesn't know exactly where to take this film. And I think that's exactly where the problem lies. I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said this is it was, the delay didn't come from effects.
Right.
It came from the direction of this film. They didn't know where to go with it. Mm-hmm. You were kind of touching on the fact that it was, you know, in some elements it was being dramatic, and other elements he was trying to be kind of artsy with the film, mm-hmm. which kind of makes sense when you're talking to, when the story is about art and whatnot.
Right.
But when one scene is artsy, the next one's really dramatic, and then the one after that is really comic, none of that exactly. seems to really flow together really well. And while that can probably work on some levels, the way that he pieces that together doesn't work here.
Thank you. Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned that there, because like you say, that those different aspects and different views in the film there, those themes can all work in the same film together.
Sure.
We've seen it done a dozen times in other, I mean, and not to, certainly not, you know, great films by anything. The first thing that pops to mind is like a lot of like Tarantino films or Guy Ritchie films that I'm big yeah. fans of that style yeah. there combine uh-huh. those different things. Just again, that's the first thing that pops into mind, but you can't do that without some sort of segue that makes sense.
Yeah, there's got to be a foundation there to solidify mm. what you're doing. And here, it's just kind of all over the place. And you kind of touched on it a little bit too with the narrative, where we have all these different characters. And I think with the Monuments Men, quote unquote, I think mm-hmm. there were seven of them total.
Yeah.
And essentially what happens in the story, and this isn't a spoiler, but basically what happens is they divide the team into like three different teams, and they kind of send them off into these different places to find all of this art. And while if that's what happened in real life, we can't get away from that too much. Kind of like what you're saying, you got to kind of stick to the mm-hmm. story, the main parts of the story. But when you do that, and you're kind of working your way through it really quickly, and I thought the pacing was a bit fast.
Right.
And I understand there's a lot to get through, and they don't want the film to be too long, so they kind of rush through some of that. But a lot of these scenes just don't come together very well. There's not a whole lot of depth to them. If anything, there's some comic relief in them, kind of like the Bill Murray scenes that yeah. you were talking about. And even with those, to me, most of those scenes just didn't really come together well for me. I just didn't think that there was anything there to really drive the story forward. They were mostly just there for some of these comedic moments, much like our clip that we played to yeah. intro this segment. That had nothing to do with the movie. You could completely cut that out altogether, and it wouldn't have affected the story at all. But it was funny. The dynamics there were great, but mm-hmm. that was about it.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, I'm glad they had those moments there, because it was nice to have a bit of, you know,
sure.
levity there. But again, it just doesn't all really match up when you put it all together
yeah.
there. It's almost, you know, a square peg in a round hole situation. I honestly don't know. I've thought a lot about the whole situation since then with the movie, and it just, like I said,
yeah.
the only way I can best describe it is it never really decides what it totally wants to be.
It doesn't. Yeah.
You know,
you're right.
I think there were a lot of great things to work with, but when I think about historic films and or movies based on historic fact anyway, you think about those stories that a lot of people don't know about that need to be told.
Sure.
Like Saving Private Ryan,
yeah.
you mentioned there.
Uh-huh.
Another, let's talk about most recent historic-based films, 12 Years a Slave. That's, you know, books that have been out there, stories that need to be
yeah.
told like that. I'm just not sure this is a story that really needed to be put into film to really, you know, to get its point across there. I mean, sure.
sure,
there are plenty of people who maybe never would have watched it before. I feel like, in a way, it was kind of, there was a lot of it kind of wasted.
Yeah.
You know, with everything they put together with this. It just, I understand that they want to move it along and not take too long with each individual scene, because they have to kind of jump around a lot. But that doesn't mean you can make the entire thing like a montage and just jump around so much.
Sure.
You know, and not spend enough time on there. They don't develop the characters enough for you to care about them. And I don't want to spoil anything.
Or to
here,
even understand what they're doing in some instances.
Exactly. Yeah, they yeah. don't develop the characters, some of them anyway, or really none of them, except for there's only a couple, two or three characters they really actually get into that you care about. And some of them, I don't want to spoil anything, but you can't wait until someone is either off screen or gone, or in any medium here, in any movie, you can't wait until a character
yeah.
dies, even on or off screen, to try to make the audience feel why they should have cared about them.
Sure.
It's too late by that point.
Sure.
And that's another thing that I felt kind of failed with this. Like, some scenes just were there, but did not push the story forward at all, had no real effect on what was going on. They were just kind of there. And you get those actors and those kind of, you know, paychecks, you don't want to cut their screen time out, certainly.
Yeah.
But what good did some of these scenes do?
really none in a lot of them. And I think it kind of comes back to what you were saying with Clooney trying to figure out what to do with the actors that he has,
right,
when he wants to try to maximize those, but he also wants to further the story along. And I think he really struggled finding that medium that worked, because while the scenes with Bill Murray and some with John Goodman or whatever, mm-hmm, some of those, yeah, sure, they came across funny, they're fine, but a lot of them, there's no depth, they don't carry along the story, they could be cut out, like there's just nothing there to really solidify it, like we were saying earlier. And so I think if Clooney was able to find or justify having those scenes in there, it would have been great. But, you know, for me, and it sounds like for you, and really for a lot of people, because this film hasn't done well critically or right, box office wise, but I think he struggled finding that middle ground that really would have lifted the material here. Because I think it's a good debate whether it's a good movie or not. I would kind of disagree with you. I think it's a good story to tell on film. I'm just not sure about the approach. I do agree maybe, yeah, this would be better as a documentary, possibly, but I think it's a fascinating story. I do like it. I just didn't really care for the way it was pieced together, because none of those characters, like you were saying, mm-hmm, you get behind very much. It was like some fresh moments with these actors that we like from time to time that made us laugh or that was charming, but yeah, that was about it, really.
I think that my honest opinion of this movie, while I get it, I agree that it's a good story and it does, you know, it's one that probably should be told in this medium here. I think that there are too many different elements in this particular film that if it was a straightforward, not necessarily documentary, but dramatic film,
yeah,
with yes, only dramatic, yes, actors, and, yeah, and the thing that I'm kind of, you know, negging myself on this right here is that my favorite aspects of the film were the more comedic elements, like I mentioned with Bill Murray and Bob Balaban's characters,
yeah, yeah,
me personally. But I think if you cut all that out completely and recast those parts there and take the comedy aspects out of it completely and make it just a straightforward, serious, you know, not really tearjerker so much film, but, you know, do that with it the way it was scripted in the screenplay, then I think it would have been a whole lot better film.
I agree. I totally agree with you. I think
For the subject material,
yes,
anyway.
Yes,
that's
I
what,
agree. Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at.
Either that or make it comedic all the way throughout, you know, not get so serious in some elements.
And I think I'm sorry not to cut you off, when they first started doing the marketing for this, when the first trailers came out, they had that kind of approach to it. It had, yes, a really lighthearted, I thought it was a comedy. I thought it was like on the same vein as like the Ocean series and the first trailers that I saw for it.
Yes. And then the second trailer came out completely different,
exactly,
tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they were trying to really gauge the interest of people, how they're out there. And who knows, by the time it hits Blu-ray, we've got a director's cut, there may be a whole lot of stuff on the floor.
That's very
there
true.
There may be completely, yeah, two completely separate versions of this, yeah, film that they just, you know, threw together here. And
yeah,
came up with that.
And that was, I think, one of the first things you and I were talking about when, mm-hmm, we walked out of the theater, is like, I think a lot of this could be an editing issue. Like,
yeah,
how much of this did they cut out? And, you know, what kind of tone were they trying to go for? And I think there's a lot of elements there that could be argued as to what could have been and what couldn't have been. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, we don't know unless there's a director's cut.
Right.
But all that we know is with the movie that we saw on screen, the one that they released, mm, there were so many different parts missing and so many different things that weren't working for the film that it just really takes you out.
Yeah.
Other than some of the comedic parts, that was engaging. I will say, or I wanted to at least ask you on this, because I think one of the parts that worked for me was Kate Blanchett's character.
Mm-hmm.
While I think there could have been a little bit more depth there, I do think that they get mostly right with her. And I think her performance plays into that pretty big, because I think, mm-hmm, she's fantastic. And there's a couple of strong scenes that she has. Did any of that work for you, or was that just kind of along the same veins as everything else?
It worked for the most part for the first, I would say, two acts. But then when she kind of just did like an immediate 180 at one point there, and, you know, again, I guess putting yourself in the shoes that I'm not going to spoil anything with the story, of course, but it was just a complete 180 with the character there at one point, and I didn't really totally get that. Because she went
kind
from
of
completely frigid to immediately like snap, you know, exact opposite end of the spectrum with
yeah,
her. And her and Matt Damon shared more screen time than any other characters they were together in with the movie there. I think for the most part, she got it right. I mean, I love her as well. She's a fantastic actress.
Yeah.
I don't know how well Matt Damon played it pretty lighthearted as well. When I think that,
yeah,
that with what he was trying to accomplish with his goal, his character's goal in that, with the importance of her having the knowledge that she had, I think it seemed like he would, he played it too soft.
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting. And, you know, I think the other thing to point out is that they are playing real-life characters. They're real-life people. So to some extent, we don't know if that's how these people were in real life or anything like that, because that guy could be completely soft-spoken kind of.
And I don't know, and I'm just judging it the way that I saw it.
Sure. So. No. And that's not necessarily a terrible criticism at all. Mm. And I think kind of going off of that, one thing that I had in my notes that I wanted to write or that I wrote down was there was a scene – without giving too much away of the narrative, there's a scene where Matt Damon goes over to Kate Blanchett's character's house, and they're having this meeting or dinner, as Kate Blanchett's character was trying to have it as. And to me, I think this is one of the defining things for the movie, as I think why it just doesn't work for me ultimately, but there are some nice moments in there, because I feel like that is a really strong scene, and there's some really great dialogue, mm-hmm. and this is where George Clooney is doing things that work well, I think, for the most part, because he slows things down. There are a couple scenes toward the third act where he just slows things down a little bit, and he kind of lets things play out. And when you do that, you kind of let these actors kind of basically fulfill these characters' motives, I think, and the themes. Now, I think my problem with that specific scene is, while it moves the story forward in a big way, mm-hmm. okay, because Matt Damon basically finds out some stuff that he needs to find out,
right?
Essentially. But there are other themes of like infidelity and other things being played there that are completely, completely unnecessary, I think.
And those themes only were announced basically in the previous scene.
Yeah.
Nothing else to do with the entire movie with those two characters had anything to do with that.
And it never comes back later.
Exactly. Either. And it was only, you know, at one point there when there's the newspaper article, she realizes that his team is actually really trying to do something and returning what art they find.
Yeah.
And I don't think that really gives anything away. That's the whole point of it. So,
sure.
You know, I'm pretty about saying that. but suddenly, she realized, oh, you really are a good guy. You really are giving stuff back here. Oh, and then she starts talking about, you know, oh, well, it's Paris and love in the air, and starts asking him if he's a faithful husband and all this kind of stuff. And at that point, that was just, you know, that's so predictable. I'm sorry, at that point, you know what's going to happen then.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you couldn't. But why? When she was so frigid before that, and immediately.
It was like she was a completely different character
exactly.
at that point. Yeah.
And it wasn't just like she was testing the waters or trying to tempt him. She flat out asked him. Yeah. You know? She said, oh, well, I'm out of wine, but I've got cognac. Yay.
Stick around for a little bit. I know. They might as well start playing
that
music.
They might have. Honestly. I mean, if the score was silly enough in other parts, they could have played some 70s porn music, and it wouldn't have been that out of sequence. I mean, for that, it just didn't. Why? Yeah. And like you said, if, I understand if that's something that was touched on before, if there were a few little hints at that earlier, the scenes they had shared, or if they touch on it later on, if, you know, he goes back again or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it then. That's fine. But you can't just say, oh, hey, by the way, and just shoehorn it in there.
Yeah, it just made zero sense. It just came in, it went, never came back, and that's all it was. And just didn't really fit the movie at all with what it was trying to do. And I guess just kind of moving on, as after that scene, there's some other things that just kind of unfold. And I will say another scene that kind of worked, and I think it's because it slowed down, at least in some ways, was when they walk into this mine, and Matt Damon's character steps on this landmine.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now to me, this is a scene that it works perfectly for what Clooney wanted to do, I think, because it's dramatic, it's serious, but they also play it comedically, and with those actors, it works well, and it wasn't too overly done. To me, that was the scene that I think Clooney was trying to do with the whole movie, but just didn't work. But that scene definitely worked perfectly, I think.
Yep, I think if they had kept the rest of the movie in that same vein there, like play it serious, but have a little, you know, like a... not a generic joke, you know, thrown in there later on. I think that Clooney, it done in those kind of, you know, straightforward, you know, comedic type roles like that.
Yeah.
With that thrown in there, he plays it straight perfectly. I love him, those kind of things there.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a great delivery for those kind of lines. I think that him and that rest of that cast and Matt Damon, again, let's go back and look at if they had made this movie like Ocean's 14, if it was Ocean's 14, but it was World War II. You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah.
But it needs to really just pick one or the other. You know, pick a cue and get in there and go with it. But for that, you know, it just really just never figures it out. It just tries to do too much and yet not enough at the same time.
I agree. And I'll say the last thing that I'll say is, and I completely agree with you. Mm. The strongest scene of the movie for me, besides that one, mm-hmm. was, again, it goes back to the same things I've been harping on. George Clooney basically just sits down in this room and he's talking to a German soldier mm-hmm. for a couple minutes.
The best scene of the movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
If it was on the dramatic end of things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's being serious. He delivers strong dialogue. It's acted really well on both sides. And to me, I think if that's the kind of tone of where he went, and it was that all the way throughout with the little comedic things mm-hmm. in there, the movie would have worked great.
But that was one of the more dramatic scenes in there. I agree with you. And the way it was acted, the way it was scripted, everything about the way it was yes. shot, I think was yes. great in that. I agree with you totally on that. Best scene entirely of the movie. The one other thing I want to mention real quick, when we're talking about, you know, a few scenes that don't really make sense so much. There's never really, I mean, other than the fact that it's a World War II movie, and we obviously know that, you know, the Germans and Hitler and blah, 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 we've seen every World War II movie out there.
Yes.
There is a couple of points where they kind of touch on like an overarching secondary type enemy with the Russian army that's kind of following them in.
Yeah.
That when the, yeah, that when exactly. the war is over with or whatever, they talk about, you know, because the movie goes through when Germany, you know, gives up. And yeah, they know that
they
you know, that, mm-hmm. that Russia is going to get this territory or whatever, and they're on their way there. And there's a lot of scenes like when they, you know, they're on their way, when the caravan is on its way to the city, and they have the, yeah. even this one, like, you know, Russian soldier or general, whoever it is, they kept, you know, showing a couple scenes with. He looks at this big, you know, bad guy that you're expecting some scenes with. Oh, finally an actual physical villain for them to have on screen.
Yeah.
Because they never show Hitler. Nobody plays yeah. Hitler. He's never seen. They hint at it. They touch sure. at it.
A few but, German soldiers here and there is about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you think, okay, we've got an actual villain to have on the screen because there's no other real threat.
That's
and
true.
And then it's credits.
Yeah.
Yeah. They touch on it. Hey, they show up there, and he's like, oh, what, I got away with it. It wasn't for you darn Americans. Yeah, it's basically what happened. And that's it. He's there for like two, like a couple of scenes. You think, oh, there's this big mean Russian. And what did we say back with the whole Jack Ryan movie? We did the review on yeah. that about, oh, we're getting back to seeing all these mean Russians on yeah, screen here. Yeah. We're getting back to this. Yeah. No, this is a period piece, and you'd expect that.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, here we go again. And then nothing, and it's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Why was it even there? I'm glad they at least didn't cast a big actor to play that part, because that was just...
Oh, yeah,
they, you know,
for
at least
sure.
they didn't spend all the
for
money sure. on that like they did all the special effects they had to push it back for. I'm glad that Michael Bay had nothing to do with this movie.
Oh,
maybe
God,
if he
that's
did,
that
was an excuse. Yeah, I try to get as yeah. many jabs in as I can.
Yeah, of course.
Can, right.
Of course. Maybe that's what it was. Clooney was talking with Bay.
Clooney and Bay. The Bay to at least produce it and Clooney direct it. And then we'll have like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, with just explosions left and right and robots.
The last thing that I'll say before we get to our grades yep. is I completely agree with you. Mm. I do think, though, on some level, there is a good sense of geography with the movie. They mm-hmm. do explore a lot of different areas. They make it pretty clear where they're at and what they're doing. And I think on some level, that was at least one of the things that kept things clear for me, even though it was kind of all over the place and a mess. So I'll give them credit for that. But outside of that, I completely agree with you on everything else.
Well, the fact that they showed a map on screen and pointed to, hey, we're going over here now. Yeah.
And I think that was necessary yeah, given well, how much of a mess it was.
There was. And like I said, the one, like I said before, where when you have to have a narration in the movie to
yeah.
explain, oh, in case you can't tell what I'm doing here because this movie is such a screw up, here's what's actually going on screen right now. Here's what we just did. Here's what we're about to do, just so you can follow along.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
There should have been like, you know, it should have been words on screen, a bouncing ball across the bottom.
Yeah, there you go.
So okay.
that probably is.
So I wanted to try not to hate on this movie, but
I'm right there with you though. All right. Well, any final thoughts? And what grade would you give The Monuments Men?
No, I mean, I've said it a couple of times through. As far as final thoughts on it here, it didn't pick out what it really wanted to be. There are honestly like three different versions of this movie that could be out there right now if they would have combined them, you know?
Yeah.
I would have rather seen a couple of different variations on the way it was shot. It doesn't drive forward the right scenes here. It jumps around too much without an explanation for it. And for me, I didn't, like I said, I really didn't hate it. I had a lot of, you know, you know, comments to make about it here, and more for just the sake of, you know, being funny than anything else. I mean, I'll give it a C. You know, like I said, it's not awful. There are plenty of better movies out there, I believe, right now.
Oh yeah.
But it's for me. I mean, I've already been to the theater and seen it, but I've honestly, a few coworkers and friends that I've talked about it too, I said, honestly, it's a Redboxer, if not a Netflixer.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Later on, I totally
agree.
Know, when we went in there, I knew that it was kind of going down a little bit in the ratings when they first were showing it in the big XD theater. And I said, I'm not paying $12 to watch this.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that my hopes have been kind of dashed already. I mean, I'll pay $9, but I'm not paying $12 to watch what I know is not going to be a great, great film.
Yeah.
I still wanted to see it, and I'm glad that I did, but I could have waited until later on to have seen it. So,
totally agree. It's definitely disappointing, given this cast. And like I said, I like the story on the surface. I think is really great. I also think that there's some really nice themes that they explore with this movie of touching on art and culture and the importance of that in our society and why it was important for these guys to go out and save this art that's been collected from all over the world. I mean, I think those themes, they touch on really great. There's one moment where Clooney is giving them a, you know, win one for the Gipper kind of speech kind of thing, which, again, it was one of those things that didn't really fit with what he's doing. But I thought the dialogue was real nice, and he touched on those themes and why it was important for what they were doing. And I do like that. I just kind of wish it was explored a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I'll just say is you touched on the score before I did, so that's minus points for me. But the score by itself, the music itself is good. And I kind of touched on this on my review. It was done by Alexander Desplat, who's a really great composer that I really like. And the music, if you just listen to it outside the film, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It fits that period really well. And it's a little stereotypical and kind of what you'd think with that. But it's nice music. But used in the film, kind of like we were saying, doesn't make any sense at times, where one scene is dramatic. Then the next scene, you have this cheesy, cartoony music that doesn't fit the movie at all, and it just kind of kills the mood in some ways. So I just didn't think it was used well, and I think that's more in Clooney than on Desplat. I thought the score, the music itself was fine. It just needed better direction, I think.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
But overall, I gave this movie a C-. It's very average, a little bit below average for me. A little bit disappointed given everything that we have here. So anyway, you can go and check out all of my thoughts on my review at incessionfilm.com. I have a review up there right now that you can check out. And John from Second Rate Report has told me he will have a video review up later this week, which we will have on our site as soon as that is up. So be sure and go and check all of that out on our site at incessionfilm.com.
Of course, if you agree or disagree with our takes on the film here, let us know by commenting on our Facebook page. That's going to be at facebook.com/incessionfilm. Or you can tweet at us. I'm getting back into it now here as well.
Yeah.
You can tweet
at
us here at incessionfilm. Leave us a comment on Google Plus as well, or Letterboxd. Usernames on both of those are incessionfilm. And of course, you can also email us at incessionfilm@gmail.com.
And the Incession Film Top 3 is next. We're going to be discussing our top 3 actor-turned-director movies, which, like we said earlier, is a little bit of a hard one, but should be pretty fun. I look forward to getting into it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Incession Film Top 3 is brought to you by the amazing and awesome guys over at First Time Watchers, which is a podcast that I really, really love. And these guys are huge supporters and friends of our show. I cannot recommend these guys highly enough. They're really, really fantastic. The show is hosted by three guys, Tim, Walter, and Hermano. And it's a really great show. If you're not familiar with them, basically what they do is they get a movie that neither of them have seen before. They go and watch it for the first time. Then they come back and they review it with really fresh perspectives, which is really nice and an interesting take on their show. They do a really good job. They know film really well. They dive into it really fantastically. They're guys that I really, really love listening to. They also talk about some of the latest movie trailers and news that is out there. They also do film recommendations at the end of their show, which is really great. They also have fun spoiler conversations on the films that they review at the end of the show. It's really good. It's a really fun show. It's one I would highly recommend. They're really, really great. Please go to iTunes right now or after our show. Go to iTunes, search First Time Watchers, subscribe to their show, and I promise you, you won't regret it. You can email them at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. Let them know that we sent you to them. You can also find all of their stuff on their website at firsttimewatchers.blogspot.com. Please go search these guys. Go subscribe. They're fantastic. I promise you, you won't regret it. These guys are awesome. First Time Watchers. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 51, and now we're going to be going over one of our harder top threes we've ever had on the podcast. We're going to be talking about our top three actor-turned-director movies. Not just directors, but you got to pick three films from them. That's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
All right, well, before we get into it, did you have any criteria to pick your list, Blake?
I mean, all was fair game here. I mean, I kind of cheated at first. I mean, I went and looked up a list here to really kind of get going. I had a few ideas at first, but I didn't want to leave anybody out to make sure I wasn't missing anything. So I kind of started with that. And I'll be honest, I might have kind of cheated a little bit here. I really couldn't pick just the one particular film from each director. I've listed my directors, and I got a couple of films from each one that I'll just touch on here anyway.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm kind of a jerk in that.
It is hard. It was hard.
Yeah. It was very difficult. And what's funny, because right when you told me we were going to do this, I texted you just like, oh, I got this. And then I went sort of looking at the list. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I forgot he directed that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that person was an actor, too. Crap.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have probably like 8 honorable mentions, and I had to like cut myself off. I was like, I can't talk about this many. Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah.
As far as criteria, I didn't really have a ton either. I didn't really limit myself on how much they acted either before they turned director. Because some of these directors, you know, have acted before, but maybe not a ton, or they've, you know, acted a ton in their own films and stuff. So for me, I was pretty loosely based on some of that. But for the most part, I mean, I think it pretty much speaks for itself.
Right.
So. Okay. Well, that being said, Blake, what is your number three?
Number three for me. And again, though, it took me a while to go through this. And I had, you know, like I said, a couple that I picked out first. Number three for me is Ben Affleck. For the longest time, I never thought I would say that. And but I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, of course, everybody keeps talking about stuff he's done. Argo was amazing. Then I go back and look at The Town. But more so for me, if I had to pick number one, one film from him, Gone Baby Gone. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the way he directed Casey in that as well. I think that it was great.
Sure.
But the three of those combined, again, I had to kind of narrow it down to a couple films for each one. So I didn't really, you know, I have to pick.
And the thing is, as much as I loved that movie, mm-hmm. I think I liked The Town better. I mean, it's at least for me personally, but they're both great. And mm-hmm. Argo's good too. And even though that won him Best Picture, I'd say that's really low in the totem pole for me personally.
Yeah, out of the three, that's my least favorite of those three films. I mean, they're all great. Again, I'm real close between Gone Baby Gone and The Town. I think that I'm not a huge Jeremy Renner fan.
That I could see. I do, but I think he's great in that. That's one of his best performances he's ever given. Him,
yeah, exactly. He was great in it. I'm not a huge fan of his. I've always really liked Casey Affleck.
Me too. I think he's fantastic.
I think he's very, very underrated.
Did you see Out of the Furnace in December?
Yeah.
He's fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
So, but yeah, number three for me is definitely Ben Affleck. I'm excited to see what goes forward here. I mean, he's got a lot of stuff that's going to be on his plate soon.
I mean,
he's shown he's got the acting chops as well as directing. I never thought I would have said that, you know, from back in the day. Talk about, you know, that guy from The Fashionable Male.
You know? I know. Exactly. I know. Exactly. See, a lot of people are hating casting on him for some reason. Uh-huh. They didn't like the Batman casting, whatnot. But, I mean, lately he has shown, maybe not to the level of McConaughey, but lately he has turned his career around a lot, I think. Oh. And I think he's been fabulous these last several years.
I'm one of those guys who, when they announced that he was going to play Batman or whatever, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, right? And made a lot of jokes. And then
sure.
the more I thought about it, and actually, in a serious way, I looked at some of these films, and again, his acting and directing in both, and he's got a vision in there, and I want to see a more serious take with the vision, the way they're trying to make this work out here.
Yeah.
And also, I'm thinking about, because there was a rumor before they actually went the whole Batman versus Superman thing, was when they were going to jump straight to doing a Justice League of America movie, they talked about wanting him to direct it, and I think that part of it is maybe they're doing this in a way to kind of convince him they still want him to direct it as well. And who wouldn't want, you know, for a film of that caliber, an Oscar-winning director, you know, to do that?
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Great choice. I like it. For my number three, I'm going with, this could be a little bit of a surprise pick. It kind of was for me, actually, when I thought about it. And I'm going with Iron Man and Jon Favreau. And here's the reason why. I think when you compare this movie to a lot of other ones, sure, it's probably not in anyone's top three, and I would totally get that.
Yeah.
But the big reason I wanted to get here is because Iron Man, the first one, is arguably the best individual character movie out of everything Marvel has done outside of that. Arguably. For me, it's probably there.
No, I would agree 100%.
And given how much that it launched this whole Marvel thing, to me, I think that is an incredible achievement. Yeah. And given, I mean, how many films has there's been by now? I mean, there's at least seven, eight films.
Not
out
only
there
what
right
there has been so far, and of course, not to cut you off by any means here, but not what there's been so far, but because of that film, Marvel has plans through 2021 already laid out.
It launched all this whole thing. And the other impressive thing about that, and why it makes my top three, is because in 2008. Mm-hmm. No one really knew who Iron Man was outside of, you know, comic book people.
Correct.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of people knew of Iron Man, but they didn't know much about him. Mm-hmm. They don't know who Tony Stark was. And now the whole world knows Iron Man really well. They know who Tony Stark is, and they relate it back to one actor who is incredible. And not to mention, he had to turn, Robert Downey Jr. had to turn his career around in big ways, and Iron Man helped to launch that for him as well. So I think when you put all of these elements together, I think there was a lot of things working against Jon Favreau, and to see the kind of success this franchise has had, to me, is really impressive, and it comes back to that film for me.
I love that pick right there because of the take that he put on that character. It's what it really needed.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, being, you know, we always talk about me being kind of the comic nerd in a way here, but the character of Tony Stark, it's a very serious and dark character a lot of times.
Yeah.
But you need to have that little bit of levity to it here, the lighter side of things, the way that he directed, you know, that movie, the series anyway.
Sure.
Was perfect. And I, you know, again, we still talk about Robert Downey Jr. in that part there, who I think he was born to be that
character. I agree.
And in a lot of ways, he honestly is Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Because of the way his career went before, you know, it was in a downward spiral, with addiction and problems like that, the same way that character did. And I'm thankful in a way. A lot of people were upset that because Disney owns the rights to those films now, to Marvel, that even through the third Iron Man movie, they've never done the Demon in a Bottle storyline through Tony Stark's alcoholism and things like that, which really kind of go back to Robert Downey Jr. And I'm kind of glad they stayed away from that. It makes more sense with Jon Favreau. I'm a big fan of his. He was actually one of my honorable mentions. Going back to, I was actually going to pick Swingers. One of my honorable mentions. Sorry, kind of announcing it ahead of time. But that's awesome pick right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one other quick note that Favreau is teaming up with Downey Jr. again this year in a movie called Chef. So
yes, I did read about that as well, which I put those two together. I'll watch anything they do, honestly.
All right, Blake, what is your number two?
Number two shouldn't be too big of a surprise to a lot of people out there. And again, I had to kind of pick between a couple movies here, which was, again, very difficult for me. My number two is old Opie Taylor himself, Ron Howard.
Nice.
I'm looking at number three that I really was trying to decide between. Apollo 13 was a really big movie for me when it came out. I was pretty young.
Yeah, me too. Loved it.
Great cast with that, the way they went together. And the other two are, he seems to have this brilliance when he works with Russell Crowe. to me anyway, between Cinderella Man and A Beautiful Mind.
Incredible movies. Incredible.
Just incredible films right there. The way that that worked out. And anything that Ron Howard does, I will watch now. You know, it seems.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter what it is. And of course, not only with the movies here, but everything he did with, you know, in television stuff as well. I mean, Arrested Development is my probably favorite TV show ever, and he was a big producer on that. I mean, the narrator on that show had a lot to do with it too. I mean, that might be honestly my favorite if I could pick and say the series over top of any movies. There are times when I go through my Netflix queue and there's nothing good on, and I'll just go back and rewatch that again.
Yeah,
you know, the series I probably watched, you know, 7 or 8 times. So
yeah. Great choice.
And I didn't get to see. I just wanted to see Rush, and it just came out on Blu-ray. That's on my list right now.
I have it. So, you can borrow it anytime.
All right. Well, I know I need to see it. If nothing else, so I can listen to the score. From what I've heard so many times about this here,
it's so good.
But I've heard a lot of really good things about the film as well. And you know,
it is.
Much,
it's great.
We talked about wouldn't think that a film based on, you know, Formula One racing, because nobody, honestly, in America for the most part, nobody really cares that much about Formula One racing,
which
it's all
is the brilliance of the film.
Exactly. And that's why I think that it carries so much more weight to get people to put that much more thought into it and care about it. But yeah, anything that Ron Howard puts his hands on, I will be right there waiting.
It's great. It was my number one surprise of 2013 and my number 8 overall film of 2013. Oh, wow. I loved it. He was fantastic. Beautiful cinematography. Mm-hmm. Great acting, overall great. Obviously, I love the score, so very good choice.
I think that he just kind of has his hands in everything in there. I don't know that much, but he's for a long time. It took me a while to even pick 3 movies that just narrow it down with him.
Some of these directors we could do a top 3 of just their own movies.
I mean, I've done that, so I've canceled that top 3 list out from now on. So, but if I had to narrow it down there, for me, the one that sticks out the most to me, honestly, though, as good as he is with the 2 films I mentioned with Russell Crowe. Though Apollo 13, Ron Howard and Tom Hanks specifically together,
it's great. Just magic. It's great. I actually rewatched it not that long ago, and most of the special effects hold up really, really well still.
Yeah,
especially for mid-90s. So I mean, it's great. It's very good stuff. All right, my number 2. I'm going with the director that has about 1 million movies out there, and I feel like we touched on this on last week's show or the week before. But I'm talking about Woody Allen, and I'm talking about Annie Hall as my number 2.
Great pick.
Amazing film. I don't think I need to go into it a ton. I'd say a lot of people or most people have probably seen this by now. Obviously, this is him starring with Diane Keaton. Great relationship piece, really great acting, great writing. I just loved it. I thought it was very charming at times. It's hilarious, really good depth, 3-dimensional movie, and I think I'm trying to remember correctly, but I think at one point Woody Allen said that movie was the turning point for him in a lot of ways, and it was such a huge movie. I actually looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes. Still holds up at like a 98%.
Oh, wow.
Out of all the reviews, it has 1 negative review. Who wanted to be that guy?
That's just a hater out there.
Yeah, but it's a great movie. I mean, I don't think I necessarily need to touch on it a lot, other than I'll just say, if you haven't seen it, please seek this out. This is considered by a lot of people to be his best film, or at least it's a lot of people's favorite film of Woody Allen's anyway, and it's really good.
When you talk about a library right there, I mean, we're talking about somebody who pretty much writes and directs a film
every year.
And for how many years has that been? And honestly, and not one of them is unwatchable by any means.
Sure.
I mean, he's a great writer with that. I mean, there's nothing bad that I can say about him. People, you know, kind of put, he's so famous. You know, they talk about, you know, the biggest form of flattery is what's the word they use for it? I forget. They're either, you know, when they poke fun at somebody or using, you know, do that so much.
Sure.
That's one of the characters that you see overdone and talked about in every different medium, whether it's, you know, look at all the cartoons from the 90s and things like that, that none of us right now when we were kids would have ever known about. But there are Woody Allen parodies is in everything out there because he's that amazing.
Yeah, I would agree. I always look forward to his films every single year. I can, even if they're not my favorite films of the year or the best ones, they're always enjoyable on some level. I know he's got another one coming out this year with Emma Stone, which I'm really looking forward to. So, yeah, he's a fantastic director that, you know, especially movie fans, they'll know him, they'll love him. So, Annie Hall, my number 2. Mm-hmm. All right, what is your number 1?
All right, well, I will say, I mean, you may surprise me in here, but I won't be too surprised if we pick the same director here. And as far as actors turned directors and some of the work that's come out in the last, you know, even decade right now, honestly, how can you not say Clint Eastwood?
What are you doing with your money?
Saving it.
Good girl. You know, you save enough of it, you ought to get yourself a little house. Cash, no mortgage.
Gonna be a while before I can do that.
Yeah, well, it might be a stretch, but you gotta get yourself a place of your own. Go around wasting it on things that don't matter, and what do you got? You understand? Pretty soon you wait long enough, you got nothing.
Okay, as soon as I get the money.
Well, I made a lot of mistakes in my life. I'm just trying to keep you from doing the same.
I know, boss.
I'm not gonna live forever.
What is it?
It's a tape on that girl in England you're gonna fight. If you're gonna go for the title, we got some moves to...
Hey, get the hell down. You know how old I am.
Thank you, boss. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I mean, I honestly, going back, especially, you know, it started for me with Million Dollar Baby. I wasn't really huge on Hilary Swank at the time there. That was such an incredible piece there. I watched Gran Torino knowing nothing about it, hardly.
Incredible film.
And it
incredible.
Was so incredible the way that, I mean, when you talk about actors and being, and of course, I mean, especially directing himself in these movies as well, but to be able to direct that and be as believable as he was, and like, it's almost speechless is the way that that movie left
It's very good.
The way that the characters developed through that.
Just incredible writing. Incredible.
Incredible, yeah. One that I loved a lot as well that he directed, I don't think he actually acted in though, was Mystic River with Sean Penn. That goes back a few years.
Yeah, it's 2001.
Yeah, a long time ago there, yeah. But... that's another one of my favorite films that I could go back and watch at any given time there. When you think about somebody that you would have never thought being that kind of a director with the films that they had done in their career, you know, from the Westerns and the, you know, Dirty Harry and all that kind of stuff, those action movies, to be that serious director.
Yeah, the kind of take on the material he has could come across as, it's very different than a lot of the stuff that he did before as an actor. But yeah.
So I think it was just some of the most dramatic on-screen moments there for me. And there was no other number one for me. That's the first thing I thought of when you told me the list. I was like, well, that's obviously at the top for me there.
For my number one, if I was picking on directors alone, I probably would pick Clint Eastwood. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think there's any better actor turned director when it comes to that. But when we're talking about specific movies,
right.
And don't get me wrong, his movies are great still. But I guess for my number one, I didn't necessarily go for what I would say, quote unquote, the best, but I went with one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about Mel Gibson's Braveheart.
I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight? We will run, and we will live. All right? Fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
I absolutely loved this film. And our old co-host way back in the early days of our podcast, Nate Parsons, this is like his number two or number three of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, we've watched this movie about 1,000 different times. And while people may not care for Mel Gibson a ton nowadays, especially in the 90s, he was fantastic. I absolutely adored this film. It's very powerful, very moving, incredible action sequences, great dialogue, amazing score by James Horner, which is a whole nother thing I could get into on a different podcast. But I loved all of those elements coming together. While this movie is considered maybe the most inaccurate historic film of all time, and that's okay. I understand that they played
Hollywood. We're not trying to be totally accurate. Yeah.
Well, it was inspired, I guess, by this book or this thing that happened. But obviously, it's this contrived thing that they made up. And for me, it was still fun. I loved how they wrote the story together. It's a great revenge piece, a lot of different depth with some of that stuff that was going on there. And I loved how they played in those revenge elements into the movie. So to me, the inaccuracies are irrelevant to me. I mean, I'm not from that part of the country, so maybe I'm a little bit biased because it's not my history. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. I mean, for me, I just had an amazing time with this. I had a strong reaction to it. I absolutely loved it. It still holds up to me. I could watch it all day, every day. I mean, I really, really enjoy this film. So for me, when it comes to actor-turned-director movies, this would be my number one.
No, and I agree with you. If you're talking single movies, absolutely. I know that in a box somewhere at home, I've got the double VHS. I know that I do still. You know, I mean, I know that I bought it when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
That was like an every weekend movie with me and some of my friends there. We would I remember, in high school. We would I graduated in 2001, so we would go to the old video store. Remember they used to have those places we could actually physically rent?
go somewhere?
Yeah. We would go there and we would either – and I worked at one when I was in high school anyway, but we would rent, rent a Nintendo 64 console and play NFL Blitz on Friday night. And then Saturday we would lay around and either watch football and watch Braveheart.
Yeah, exactly.
Braveheart was like almost every weekend, or at least once a month, if nothing else.
I mean, William Wallace just has to be one of the most badass characters
ever.
On film ever. Yeah.
Ever.
I mean, he's just incredible.
And again, the thing I mentioned with Woody Allen, as far as like parody being the best, compliment ever. Again, how many different mediums have you seen Braveheart parodied in? And not just the William Wallace character from history or whatever. It would have never been that way if it wasn't for "they may take our lives, but they will never take our freedom."
Exactly.
If that had
one of the best
happened,
lines ever.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I doubt that I don't know if the real William Wallace ever said that or not. He was probably
most likely
too
not, but
I doubt it. I doubt that he said that. But now I like Mel Gibson a lot, even despite some of his personal flaws as a director and actor. Another one that he directed, I believe, he was one of my honorable mentions as far as directors go. Edge of Darkness was a movie that I really loved that almost nobody that I know of ever saw. That was extremely powerful. But I will agree with that. If we're talking single movies there, Braveheart, it could be the number one on so many different types of lists.
Sure.
So excellent pick.
Yeah, I loved it. Very, very good stuff. All right, before we move on, did you have any honorable mentions?
Well, I mentioned a couple there, I think, during the course of all that. I didn't mean to literally derail the segment here, but we already kind of brought them up here, ones that we shared. Definitely Mel Gibson was on my list there. I'm trying to think of a few others that I had. I had like a whole long list that I had typed out here, and I erased a lot of it out because I went into my top three here. But I think the ones that I previously mentioned there were the bulk of it. I did like some of I mentioned earlier when we were talking about the movie previously, Monuments Men, that Good Night and Good Luck was a movie that I really liked that Clooney directed.
Yeah.
So that was kind of up there, higher up on my list anyway. And I'm sure there are dozens more that I could go over, but I think I touched on about everything right now.
For me, I had a lot of honorable mentions. Citizen Kane. Orson Welles, a big one for me. Million Dollar Baby, I had written down. As I mentioned earlier, The Town with Ben Affleck. Stories We Tell, Sarah Polley, with this documentary that came out last year. Mm. Absolutely loved that documentary. Another Mel Gibson one that I wrote down was Passion of the Christ, which is a whole debate in itself. But for me personally, I think the importance of that film and the way that it was done was vital, and I thought it was done really, really well. But that's a whole different debate to get into why I think that's the case. I also wrote down A Beautiful Mind and Rush from Ron Howard, although Apollo 13 you can probably just throw into that mix as well.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I also wrote down Monty Python and the Holy Grail. which is a fun one.
Right.
Well, from those guys.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I was going to mention. I'm just not to. I'll let you go on that. But Terry Gilliam, yes, 12 Monkeys was one that I really a wild movie that I just used to. I loved so much anyway. But yeah, when you think about Monty Python directing that and the new one, what's the name of that? The one he's got a new one coming out very soon with Christoph Waltz.
It's escaping me right now.
Yeah, I cannot think of the life of it for me right now. It'll come to me later. We'll talk about it at some point, I'm sure. Sorry. Anyway, continue.
That's fine. And then the other ones I had down real fast was Blazing Saddles, Mel Brooks, and Ordinary People, which was directed by the great Robert Redford, who I really love. And that's probably his best film director-wise anyway. So, yeah, like I said earlier, there could be like a million films that we could list, but those are just kind of some of the best ones and the ones that I enjoyed the most, at least for me.
I think we did pretty good for such a huge list. And it down.
For sure.
I'm just saying that because I didn't really do just one film each. I'm trying to make myself look a little better. Okay, so let us know how your picks stack up against ours. Email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com or leave a comment on Facebook or Twitter or on the website at insessionfilm.com.
Okay, just want to talk about the poll question that we threw up on our website from this last week, where it was slightly different, where we just asked you who is the best actor turned director, which we kind of went into, and that was more or less your list there, Blake. But the answers that we threw down was Clint Eastwood, Orson Welles, Charlie Chaplin, Woody Allen, Ron Howard, Mel Gibson, George Clooney, or you could just kind of write in your own. And taking away this far and away was Clint Eastwood with 48% of the vote. Although Charlie Chaplin, Ron Howard, and Mel Gibson all had 10% right there as well. We also had a couple of write-ins for Kevin Costner, Ben Affleck, and Russell Crowe also got little write-in votes as well. So there's a lot of really directors that you could just kind of throw in.
It seems like any of those, you know, real serious actors like that direct something at some point or another. It just depends on how well it turns out. There's a huge list of ones that are really fantastic. We went over there. So.
Absolutely. And ultimately, I think you and I would agree that if we were talking about best actor turned director, like the poll said, Clint Eastwood, hands down, for sure. All right, and just want to say a quick thank you to those that are supporting the show. If you want to support us, just go to our website, insessionfilm.com, and you can click on that fun premium tab on our main menu, and there you can purchase any of our premium podcasts for just a small donation of 99 cents. And right next to that premium button, there's also a donate button, so you can just donate directly to the show if you want to, and we really, really appreciate everyone that is supporting us.
All right, up next is the February preview from In Session Film. We're going to talk about what you can expect this month here. We're going to break it all down for you next.
My body in chocolate frosting. 3 years later, I shot the frosting. Smelling like a blossom, everything is awesome. Stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. It's awesome to win and it's awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 51. And now Blake and I are going to talk about what to expect this month, February, that is, at the box office and coming to theaters. And obviously this last weekend was The Monuments Man, as we touched on, but also a movie that came out was an animated film that you and I were both looking forward to in The Lego Movie. Now, you haven't got a chance to see this yet, but I did get a chance to see it. There's a review up on the website now for it, and we actually recorded an extra film podcast for this over the weekend where Brandy Woodrum and Polly Popcorn from Filmigos.com joined us, and we had a fun little discussion on that, and that's actually up on the site right now at InSessionFilm.com. But you haven't got a chance to see this, and I know you're looking forward to it.
I have not, but I have heard that everything is awesome.
It is awesome.
This is what I've heard from a lot of friends of mine. Like I said, we talked about earlier in the beginning. I've been sick for about a week or so. So I'm really, you know, I'm here now. So I'm hoping in the next couple of days I'm going to be able to get a chance to get out there and watch it. Actually, I'm off work here in a couple of days. So I'm going to make a point of going and seeing that at least once.
Sure. Yeah. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it because it's fantastic. It's very, very, very good. Okay, well, moving on, coming out, we're recording this on Tuesday, so coming out tomorrow, we have the RoboCop remake is coming out. Is this something that you're looking forward to, Blake?
I am, actually, and I mean, for a while, we talked about before we went and saw Monuments Men that it was like seemed to be looking a little bit better as far as the reviews on it ahead of time than even Monuments Men, which sounded strange. I am, in a way, looking forward to it. I think that We may be talking about it later on if we ever revisit that one top three we did back when we reviewed Old Boy about unnecessary remakes, because I don't think necessarily it needed to be, but I think that with the technology now, I'm interested in that. Yes. I don't honestly know much about Joel Kinnaman, the character that's playing, the guy actor that's playing RoboCop, but I like, you know, we've got a lot of other people in there, Samuel L. Jackson, Michael Keaton, Gary Oldman, Jackie Earle Haley, a lot of other actors that I really like a lot, and I'm looking forward to a new take on it. I think that it's for a new generation. This is one that might make sense, but it'll be until after I get a chance to see it. Good timing on it here. It's definitely a romantic movie.
that's what I was thinking.
The release date makes perfect sense.
It should be pretty fun. Like you said, the cast does look pretty interesting. Although I don't know much about Joel Kinnaman either. Mm-hmm. One of them that you did mention was Gary Oldman. And what I know, though, is Gary Oldman's character is a new character that they've written for this particular story, which I haven't read a ton on the story. But what I know is that it's – or what I've heard anyway from some people is that it's a little bit of a unique take on this kind of environment and this kind of character. So – I guess what people can expect is it not to be quite the same as the original, which is one that I plan on catching up with this week, hopefully, before I get to go see this. So, but yeah, I'm actually kind of excited for it. I think with the new technologies you're talking about, I think could kind of play into it. I know it's PG-13. It's not R like the original, which some people aren't quite on top of, but I think they're kind of trying to go for more like the Iron Man Marvel kind of stuff where it's action but PG-13 and still kind of clean. So.
And I think they kind of have to at this point. They want to capitalize, and I get that, you know, on what they you know, can do.
Yeah, because when you're rated R, you're limiting yourself at the box office.
Exactly. So agree.
Well, coming out the weekend of Valentine's Day, we have the only, I guess, kind of Valentine's Day type movie that we'll discuss, or that's probably worth discussing anyway. And we're talking about Winter's Tale. And this is a movie that stars Colin Farrell, Jessica Braun Finley, Russell Crowe, and a few other people as well. What do you think about Winter's Tale, Blake?
I don't really know what to think about it yet. I mean, I've seen the trailer a handful of times already, and I can't figure out whether it's going to be like a generic romance movie.
Sure.
Or there's some sci-fi type aspects to it as well. I worry that it's going to be too much like Cloud Atlas was.
Yeah.
Where it seems like the same actors are playing different characters in different times.
Something that worked for you?
In Cloud Atlas?
Yeah.
No, not really. That movie was just kind of blah to me, and I didn't love that. I think, I mean, of course, we weren't working together at that point there, but I think I probably would have given that, you know, a C minus or something.
Interesting.
I didn't really like it. I think it was too much like that. I don't know. There are certain things that I like Colin Farrell in, and it's usually not this. So I don't know. I mean, I like Russell Crowe a lot. We'll see how it works together. I'm interested in a way to see, but I don't know what real angle it's taking.
I think Colin Farrell is one of the most underrated actors out there. I think he's a really good actor that no one really talks about. And I think he had a really strong 2013, even though it kind of flew under the radar altogether. Mm-hmm. I thought he had a great year. His role in Saving Mr. Banks, I think, besides Emma Thompson, I think carried that movie into some new territory for me because he was a crucial part of that story. And I thought he was absolutely fabulous. So I actually look forward to it on those levels because I look forward to seeing if he kind of continues this trend of performances that I really love because I thought he had a great year last year. And I love Russell Crowe for the most part, so I'm kind of interested to see how those dynamics kind of work together,
yeah.
even though it's kind of fit into this kind of, you know, lovey-dovey, cheesy Valentine's Day movie. But,
yeah.
You know, those parts, who knows? I do think it'll be a fun date movie, which I plan on taking the fiancé to. So we'll see. I'll have a report for you next
time. I'm going to have to go find a fun date then.
Yeah. And I, another one that comes out Valentine's Day weekend that we're not going to talk about is Endless Love, which is probably one that I'll skip unless reviews are like incredible. Like, and by incredible, I mean like they'd have to be like probably like 80% at least on Rotten Tomatoes for me to go see that. But anyway, let's move on to February 21st and a movie that actually looks kind of interesting to me. I'm not quite sure how to feel about it yet, but the first movie let's talk about is Pompeii. Now, this looks like it could be a typical disaster movie with some kind of action stuff in there. I've actually heard some decent things about this movie. I'm a little bit at an arm's length, but what do you think about it?
I'm a little skeptical about it. I think that, again, you know, it could be, I mean, obviously that we've got a disaster aspect to that film. I think that there's going to be, there's a lot of action to it and romance as well. I think it has a lot of potential. What worries me in a way, but with this film, it also I think is a good thing, is Kit Harington. I think that any time that I've seen him so far play anything besides his character in Game of Thrones, it's been not good.
Really?
And I worry about that in a way, but I think that the time period of this movie here might lend itself to his style that he's used to playing that. At the same time, I kind of hate that, because if it does work too well for me here compared to some of the other things, then he's very, very typecast at that point, which, you know, any movie like that is going to happen. He's going to be in, which is not always a bad thing. But that's the wild card, I think, is how well he actually does in more of a leading role. He has not had a role like that so far.
Yeah,
but he's got a huge fan base behind him. You know, everywhere you go, as far as Game of Thrones fans, you know how crazy they all are here. You know, everybody loves Jon Snow. We'll see. You know, I definitely want to see it. I think it could be very good, but like I said, it could be a wild card. It could be just a typical, you know, kind of action movie, and we'll see. It's definitely a big, you know, special effect monster, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to kind of where they're going to go with this story, because I don't know a ton about Pompeii in detail other than the volcano destroying the town aspect of things. I mean, that's pretty much all I know about it, so I'm kind of curious to see where they go in terms of narrative. The other big thing that kind of keeps me at an arm's length, although it looks interesting by the trailers, is the fact that it's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who's a director that I don't really care for a ton. If you're not familiar with him, he's directed Resident Evil Retribution.
Resident Evil. He's married to Mila Jovovich. So.
Yeah. The Three Musketeers, Death Race, Alien versus Predator, and a bunch of movies that I don't necessarily care for. I mean, looking through his filmography, I couldn't even begin to tell you a movie that I actually cared for a ton of his.
That's worrisome.
So I think that's something that is going to keep me a little bit wary about how much I may or may not enjoy this movie. But I will say, based on the trailers, the marketing has sold me enough that I'm interested. But I'm going to be walking in a little bit of an arm's length going, all right, Anderson, you got to prove something to me.
Yeah, I worry that, like you mentioned, not knowing a whole lot about the real historical facts of it, I worry if the studio is banking on nobody knowing anything other than there was a volcano and just saying, hey, we're going to do this movie, but, oh, there's a volcano.
That's a good point.
I mean, Hollywood, you know, they've been notorious for doing things like that.
Yeah, very, very true. Moving on, also that weekend, we have Kevin Costner thinking that he can become Liam Neeson for some reason in 3 Days to Kill. This is directed by McGee and stars Kevin Costner, Haley Steinfeld, and a few other people. But what do you think about this one, Blake? And please don't tell me that you're excited.
Oh, God, no. The last thing we talked about, I honestly, is it McGee or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
You remember Terminator Salvation? And if you don't remember it, I don't blame you for it. But I mean, I remember all the hype about it, and this guy was supposed to be the next big action director and everything, and it was just a crock. I mentioned, I hate to keep going back to this movie because I didn't like it, but we were talked about, I mentioned earlier a little bit something about the Jack Ryan movie we reviewed a little while ago.
Sure.
We mentioned during the review on that, that everybody will know about this because they all listened to that review. For the two scenes in that movie that Kevin Costner was in, like action sequences, it was the most non-believable thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so 5 minutes out of an hour and a half movie, he was non-believable in that.
Exactly.
So I can't imagine him for an hour and a half.
Exactly.
In this.
Exactly.
So. I like the fact that he's kind of getting a little bit of a big screen, you know, retribution here. He was in Jack Ryan. He's got this movie here, which I think is going to be awful. I'm more honest. I'm looking forward to Draft Day.
That's
a Kevin Costner movie.
Yeah.
That's Kevin Costner what I'm thinking of right now, at least in his current age. This is not Dances with Wolves Kevin Costner anymore. This is not Waterworld Kevin Costner anymore. Yeah. And I hate that I actually said that both of those right next to each other here, but I mean, I'm thinking of things where you did a little bit more action kind of stuff here anyway.
Yeah, like you said, that is a great reference going back to the Jack Ryan review because, you know, we did talk on that. I mean, none of us bought him in that role, or at least in those moments. He was much better in the more subtle Draft Day like moments.
Well, he was great in that role, but not when he was holding a sniper rifle and trying to run around.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. I will say, going back to the director here, McGee or whatever it is.
McNugget. Whatever. Nobody cares anymore.
I will say, while he has done some things I didn't really care for, I did like We Are Marshall, which is a very different film than this altogether, but I do think there's potential, I'll say. There's potential there for him to do something good, although I don't think it's going to be this.
There's potential for most people seeing this on Stars or Encore in a few months.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on to something way more worth talking about is The Wind Rises.
Yes.
Which is up for an Oscar for Best Animated Film of 2013. Of course, here in the States, we are getting it here in the next couple of weeks. So what do you think about The Wind Rises?
What I think is I'm very excited to see it. And I actually want to keep it this way. I know very little about it. I know what the story is about. I know the premise of that. I know we've got a lot of really great American actors in the voiceovers in this version here. I like that style of animation.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to it a lot. I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to see that, but I definitely want to. I'm looking forward to it, especially, like I said, it's knowing it's up for an Oscar. I like those kind of films that I know nothing about and in a way can kind of keep it that way.
Yeah.
And this is one I want to keep in that vein there, to an extent anyway. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to seeing that.
I'm really curious to see how American audiences are going to respond to it. You kind of touched on the story a little bit. If you're not familiar with this movie, it's basically the look at the life of this Japanese man who designed Japanese fighter planes in World War II, which is right up my alley. I mean, I think I'll love it. But, you know, considering that he designed planes that killed Americans that attacked Pearl Harbor, I'm not sure if that will necessarily carry over into anything. I'm just a little bit curious to see how people would respond to that. But overall, though, I'm pretty excited. I've heard nothing but great things about it. Like I said, it's up for an Oscar for a reason. So, I mean, I've heard in a lot of circles that it could actually beat Frozen. So, who knows? I mean, it's definitely one I'm looking forward to. So,
and especially
with, you know, the Lego movie coming out this last weekend, great animated film. This one coming out, this could be a pretty strong year for animated films. So really looking forward to it. Okay, and then moving on to the last weekend real fast, the first one we're going to talk about is Liam Neeson in his maybe a little bit better fit for him, but we're talking about Nonstop, which I'm sure by now many people have seen the trailers for this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this getting old for Liam Neeson?
A little bit. I'm still going to watch it because I like Liam Neeson. I like him in almost everything that he's in, and you know, it's just that it looks like the same thing we've seen a couple of times, and maybe it won't be.
Yeah, that's very true. It could be just bad marketing.
It could be, and I think that maybe with the marketing that they're banking on, that they know what kind of money some of the other movies he's been in the last few years has done, but I think that ever since the first Taken came out, everything that he gets cast in almost ends up being that kind of an action film. And I worry that it's just Hollywood trying to grab as much cash as they can while he's still physically able to play these kind of roles.
Sure.
And I think he's a great dramatic actor. I love Liam Neeson so much and everything that he does, honestly.
He's a great actor.
I will definitely see this. I would like to see, you know, I don't know. I can't say that I'm really looking forward to it. I'm kind of, you know, teetering back and forth on this one right now because the last time, you know, both the Taken movies were good, and then the last one he did, the kind of a question was Unknown, and that looked. I think this look reminds me more of Unknown than it does Taken, but that one didn't turn out as well to me. I didn't like it nearly as much. I don't know. I mean, the jury's out on this one as far as right now. I'm anxious to see how it turns out. I'm not going to have any high expectations, though, I'll tell you that.
I will say one thing that I like about this is, besides the fact that it stars Liam Neeson, who's great, like you talked about, but it also has Julianne Moore, who's an actress I like, and it has Lupita Nyong'o, who's an actress we both fell in love with from 12 Years a Slave. Right. So I'm really curious to see how she kind of fits into other different things, something that is not 12 Years a Slave. So I'll be really curious to see her in that. But I like the cast. I think the cast here could be a lot of fun. Who knows about the story? You know, when they were marketing The Gray, they kind of marketed it as this kind of action thriller.
Yeah.
And I think it was much more than that.
Oh, we both definitely agree on
that. Yeah, so I'm hoping that maybe that's the case here too, that there's more going on than what it's been marketed to us. But in the way the trailers have come across, it hasn't made me excited. What makes me excited is this cast and that I like them. And I'm curious to see their dynamics together, and that's mostly it.
Well, I really hope you're right with that, but like you say, with the marketing on that right now, it we're in 2014. It screams 90s action movie to me right now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's the kind of vibe I get.
But who knows? I mean, it's a February movie. That's the kind of stuff we get this month, and maybe they're just trying to make a quick buck. So
we'll see.
Who knows? Moving on, the last thing that we're going to talk about is a movie that I don't think will necessarily get a ton of play, but I'm really curious, given all of the other biblical epics that are out there, which is something you talked about on the Jack Ryan show when we were talking about films we're looking forward to in 2014. A lesser of those is a movie called Son of God, which comes out that weekend as well, which is directed by Christopher Spencer and stars a relatively unknown cast, and it's basically a film based off of that miniseries that the History Channel did. I don't know if it took the same name or not, but that's kind of where they're going for with this. And so while I don't think it'll live up to those other biblical epics you were talking about, I'm still kind of curious about it.
Yeah, mostly with these. I mean, I'm curious about it here, but, you know, when you compare it to the monster that you've got with you know, the money that's behind the other ones that are out there and the cast they have.
Sure.
I have not really any expectations in particular for it here. I'm interested to see how it does. I mean, sometimes you get those that, you know, have those kind of unknown casts that kind of really stand out more because you don't expect anything from them. I'll mention, you know, like you mentioned earlier when you're doing honorable mentions on actor-directors, Mel Gibson's The Passion. When that came out and I saw that, I had no idea. I'd never seen Henry Cavill in anything before. Or not Henry Cavill, I'm sorry, Jim Caviezel. Why did I say that? I was wrong. Jim Caviezel. I hadn't seen him in anything previously before that, so it was totally unknown to me.
Yeah.
And was, of course, incredible. And I mean, of course, you had some money behind that with Mel Gibson and what have you. I'm not, you know, totally equating the same thing here, but I like these type of movies if they do it justice and do it right.
Yeah, I agree.
And so coming from someone who has, you know, some knowledge on, of course, the background there, you know, we'll see. And I guess I don't have any expectations out of it. So
yeah,
and that might be the best way to go into a movie like this.
Sure. And I'm really curious about it to kind of see what direction they go with. I think the big thing with biopics, which is pretty much what this is that if you don't really take the time to explore certain areas, that the movie can feel kind of fast and it's not necessarily explored very well. I don't think this will have the weight or the kind of depth that The Passion of the Christ will have. It's going to explore a lot of different areas. It's probably not going to be as gruesome or as detailed as Mel Gibson went with some of that.
Right.
So I think it's just going to be a kind of surface level, here's kind of the big points of what happened according to the Bible. I think it's pretty much all that it's going to happen. So it'll just be average movie, most likely.
I agree with that.
Okay, and that's pretty much all we had.
All right, so let us know your thoughts on the movies we got coming up here in February. Let us know what you're looking forward to, if you have any expectations or you know, high or low, of course. I'm interested to see what everybody else out there is thinking compared to us. So hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or email us. We'd love to know your thoughts. We do try to reply back to every email that we get. So hit us up at insessionfilm@gmail.com.
Absolutely. Before we move on real fast, I just want to say a quick thank you to everyone who supported our show, and not necessarily just with our premium stuff, but for those that just follow us on Twitter, that like us on Facebook or Google Plus, we're always interacting with people on there and talking with other podcasters and movie bloggers and things like that. So for those of us that are just interacting with us and supporting us in any fashion, we really, really, truly appreciate it, and we always get some great feedback throughout the week. So just wanted to take a quick second to say thank you for that. All right, well, we're going to finish off the show real fast with films we got to see over the last week. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Watch him move so fast, man, it's hard to believe. But guess who did it? Yeah, he did it. He competes and never quit it. To all his friends and fans, look at him crossing the finish. Turbo!
You see the snail moving fast. You slow, you gon' get past. You see him gaining position, but first he won't be last. He's ready to make a dash. Snail quicker than a lightning flash. His engine's roaring, he's roaring, he won't run out of gas.
The snail is fast. The snail is fast. The snail is fast.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 51. And real quick, Blake and I are going to just discuss some of the films we got to see over the last week. Blake, kick things off. What'd you get to see, man?
Well, you would think that with me being sick for a week or so, I've been laying around watching nothing but movies or TV, but I was trying to actually rest up and sleep most of the time. Sure. So there's only two films that I actually got to watch this week. Yeah. Looking at some things that I had not gotten to see previously. The first was 2011's Margin Call, which I, you know, looking at the cast listing on there, I was really interested. I love everything that Kevin Spacey does. So that first got my attention, but Kevin Spacey, Zachary Quinto, Paul Bettany, Jeremy Irons, of course. And we also had Demi Moore had a role in that. Mm-hmm. A great small part by Stanley Tucci, who I really enjoy him as an actor as well.
Yeah.
The film itself is based around, you know, what happened right before, basically 24 hours before the huge economic collapse in 2008.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's, there's a lot of kind of black and white to it, not in the film itself, but the way that it, the subject matter of it anyway. And so you can't expect it to be, you know, a huge, you know, thrilling action piece because it's not based on that. But the way that it was acted, the dramatic parts to it, I thought were really good. You know, it was a little slow, but again, with the subject material, you know, that's kind of what you expect out of it.
Yeah.
But I did really enjoy that. Like I said, especially Kevin Spacey's one of my favorites in almost anything he's in. So he was great in that. And I was also thinking about Jeremy Irons, who's the last time we talked about him being cast in Batman and everything. So, you know, I was just kind of thinking more about that, too.
I agree. It's very good. And if you're not familiar with that movie, one, I would recommend it. I think it is a good watch. But it's also written and directed by J.C. Chandor, who did this year's All Is Lost.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not familiar with his other work, I would definitely go check it out. Because All Is Lost is fantastic if you've seen it from this last year. But yeah, I agree. That's a good one.
The other one that I got to catch up on was The Paperboy.
Oh, okay.
Which I'd heard, you know, a lot of mixed things about. I'd never really gotten to see it. Didn't really get great reviews. And it was kind of an interesting, there's a number of different kind of lines and themes through that story there, but there's a lot of coming of age stuff. Zac Efron, his character. Matthew McConaughey was great in that. I really actually liked Nicole Kidman a lot in this role.
Yeah.
As bad of a character as it was, she played it, I think, great.
Yeah.
You know, a great character, performance by John Cusack as well. I really enjoyed it.
Sure.
Again, you know, terrible human being in there, but there were a lot of different, you know, small characters in that I thought were interesting.
And that was done by Lee Daniels.
Lee Daniels, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, who a lot of people remember, you know, did The Butler previously this year here.
Yeah, yeah.
Precious, a couple of the things that he had done that were
sure.
A lot of different subject material than this right here, but a great piece of acting by Matthew McConaughey. Again,
of course,
you know, on this, you know,
yeah,
resurrection that he's had in the last couple of years here.
Yeah.
But really, really enjoyed that a lot more than I think the general public out there did.
Yeah. I actually haven't caught up with that one completely. I'm familiar with it in a lot of ways, but I actually haven't seen it all the way through. So that'd be one I'll definitely have to check up on.
Yeah, I will say if you want to, it is currently streaming on Netflix. If you're a subscriber there.
There you go.
So anybody else over who's interested in that, it is currently available.
Very nice. I caught up with a few movies myself. The first one I got to rewatch was 2011's Crazy Stupid Love. This is one of my fiance's favorite movies because she's a Ryan Gosling fan and she loves Gosling in these movies. Which, you know, her and Emma Stone, who's an actress that I really personally like. You know, it's okay. It's a decent movie for what it is. You know, it's nothing that I will necessarily seek out a ton of, but it is one that I have bought on Blu-ray for the girl because it's of her favorites. So, but it's okay. I mean, if you like, you know, that kind of stuff, then, you know, I think it's definitely bearable for sure. Although I like Gosling in more of his smaller indie stuff more so than this stuff, but is okay. Okay, well, moving on to something much, much better. I got to see the Belgian film The Broken Circle Breakdown, which is a film that I'm hoping that we can do on an extra film sometime soon. It stars names that I don't even want to begin to know how to pronounce.
Right.
I will completely butcher them altogether. Same thing with the director. It's Felix von something. And I don't want to say them because I don't know them, honestly. Right. So, getting back to the movie, though, this movie is really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I really had a strong reaction to this film. Basically, it centers around this couple who meet and they fall in love and they have this baby. And as the little girl gets a little older, she's like 4 or 5, something like that, she basically has cancer or some sort of very serious illness. And so the story kind of flashbacks a lot. It's not a traditional narrative. It kind of is broken up into different segments, and it explores the relationship of the couple and when they meet and when they, you know, have the girl, and then there's the illness with the little girl and basically how that plays out and whatnot. And in the middle of all that, they play in this bluegrass band, which is very interesting that we have this Belgian film and they play a lot of bluegrass music. And I'm not the biggest bluegrass fan, but I'll say I loved the music in this movie. I thought it was just really good. It was very engaging, and I thought they did a really great job with it. And it was used perfectly in the film because it was never overbearing. It was never too much. It was used just perfectly, I thought. I thought they explored this story really well. It's heart-wrenching. It's hard on some levels. It's very sad. But to me, it was never over the top. It was never too much. It was just kind of blended perfectly, I think. So, like I said, it's definitely one hopefully that we can touch on soon on an extra film. It's really, really good. This is also up for Best Foreign Language Film for the Oscars.
Right.
While I think it has no chance of winning, I did like it better than The Great Beauty in my mind, which is, you know, what a lot of people think is going to win that category. Is it better than The Hunt? I think it'll depend. For me, I think I enjoyed it better than The Hunt, although they're both arduous films to watch on in some ways. But I loved it. I think it's a really, really good movie that I would highly recommend seeking out. So, and it's also kind of in the vein of, if you watch it and you don't understand what they're saying, obviously, if you don't speak Belgium or whatever,
right?
Even if there's no subtitles, you can still kind of get a feel for what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's sort of in that vein. Of course, I watched it with subtitles, so I knew what was going on, but it's just kind of one of those things. So, and then speaking of movies with no subtitles, I also watched The Godfather Part II after watching the first one last week. I caught up with the second one, which is an amazing film. It's very good. I obviously don't need to really go into it, but I'd say one of the bigger things out there with these movies is a lot of people say the second one is better than the first one. A lot of people do. Not everyone, but a lot of people consider that to be the case. And I don't know if I feel that way after rewatching these the last couple weeks. While the second one is great, and they do, it's a phenomenal movie on all accounts, I think I still enjoy the first one better than the second one.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that I've heard the number of people say that they like the second one better comparatively to the first. They're both great there, and don't want to take anything away from the second, but I certainly don't think that it even really touches the first one. So
yeah, it just kind of depends on, I guess, what kind of circles you're talking about. Right. So. Yeah, I mean, for me, I definitely like the first one.
Well, one thing we know for sure is nobody's ever said Godfather 3 was better than either of those two. So.
That's for sure is definitely true. And I think the other thing that most people can agree on is it's arguably the best sequel of all time, if anything. So, yeah. And that I would agree with as well. So,
well, I'll agree with that part then.
And then the last thing that I rewatched, and I won't go into this a lot because I've talked about it a lot on the show, is I rewatched the animated film Turbo. Again, for no reason other than friends came over who hadn't seen it, and I just kind of wanted to show it to them. So I just thought it was way underrated. I loved it. The music to me was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It was very good, at least for me. So
I still have yet to see that one as well. So everything's Turbo and Transformers with you.
I know.
I'm kidding.
Well, I am excited for Transformers 4, which the Super Bowl trailer came out. It was very fun. I've watched it like a million times since then.
Yeah, I mean, I have. I'm not that as big a fan of that, but I mean, bright and shiny Optimus Prime, Dinobots.
It's going to be good. One other quick thing before we get out of here today, too, is going back to, I meant to say this when we were talking about Nonstop and it slipped my mind, but there is a new piece of marketing out there for this film that I think is the main reason why I want to watch it.
Okay.
And it's the show on Comedy Central, Key and Peele. I don't know if you've seen it, but they do this bit where...
My name's Blake. You think it'll go by Blake all the time? Okay.
They do this bit, if you haven't seen the show, where they basically, Key and Peele, they stand outside on the street and they're pretending to be like these hotel, I don't want to say butlers, they're like bellboys or whatever. And so they're just standing out there and they basically do this bit where they talk about movies and different actors and stuff, and they just go way over the top and crazy and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And Liam Neeson is one of the guys they've talked about a lot in this bit because they've done it a couple times. And so they did this thing where they were talking about the new movie Nonstop with Liam Neeson, and they were going crazy, and then at the end of it, Liam Neeson actually walks out. Well, what are you guys gonna get my car? They just lose it and just go crazy. It's hilarious. It's on YouTube. I would highly recommend seeing it out. It's one of the best pieces of marketing I've seen. It was brilliant. So I was like, I tweeted it earlier today, and I was like, if you're going to market a movie, especially a movie like that, this is a much better way to do it than the Nonstop trailers.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's great. Highly, highly recommend seeking it out.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, very, very good stuff. Well, Blake, I think that'll pretty much do it for this week's show. If you want to like us on Facebook, you can do that. You can just go to facebook.com/InSessionFilm and you can find us there. You can also hit us up on Twitter @InSessionFilm. Like I said earlier, we're always tweeting a lot and engaging with everyone that follows us. So be sure and go and do that. And hit us up on Google+ and on YouTube. And find some fun videos there. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can do that on Facebook by clicking on our newsletter tab or on our website at InSessionFilm.com/newsletter.
All of our reviews are up on our website, of course, as well as on Letterboxd. So check us out at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm. As I mentioned earlier, we do try to respond to every piece of email we get. So hit us up there at InSessionFilm@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and on Stitcher. And while you're over on iTunes, please leave us a review. We greatly appreciate that. And, of course, you can check us out the Listen Now page here at the website at InSessionFilm.com/listen-now.
And the In Session Film podcast is supported by our awesome listeners like you. As I mentioned earlier, we have premium podcasts that you can get for just a small donation of 99 cents, or you can just donate whatever you want to the show. We really appreciate that. You can find all of those details at InSessionFilm.com. You can also hear every single thing that we do on our mobile app for just a one-time fee of $1.99. And you can get that app on the Amazon market for Android devices and on the podcast box app for iOS devices. And all of those details are on the website at InSessionFilm.com/apps. And that'll do it for this week's show. Next week, we are going to be reviewing... What are we reviewing next week?
I don't know. You haven't told me yet.
RoboCop. We're talking about RoboCop next week.
Right. Dead or alive, you're watching this movie.
Exactly.
Now I'm excited. I told you I wanted to see that. Good.
Yeah. So we'll be doing RoboCop next week. But we'll have reviews for that. And Winter's Tale and Endless Love will be up on the website later this week. So you can be sure and check that out. And also, as I mentioned, we have an extra film review where we discussed the Lego Movie, which was really awesome and very good. So I would highly recommend checking all of that out. Definitely hit us up and give us any feedback. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it for sure. Well, I guess, Blake, before we get out of here, did you have any final thoughts on anything?
I want to see like 3 or 4 different versions of the Monuments Men.
Yeah.
I want to see like a really like gripping series, like gritty hardcore, like Schindler's List version.
Yeah.
And then I want to see like a Wes Anderson version of that at the same time.
As you said, that or Aronofsky, I think, can provide a really nice touch on it.
Right. I want like a straight up. Did you ever see? There's a parody from Saturday Night Live where they made fun of Wes Anderson films.
Yeah.
It was just, even if you didn't know that's what they were doing, you would know that's what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
I think. I mean, we've already got Bill Murray in the cast.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That's one of those things. Let's put Jason Schwartzman in there somewhere, and we're pretty much good to go. I mean, we can throw some cameos together in there. Angelica Houston, Owen Wilson. I mean, we're good to go. That's the only thing I can think of there. It was so many movies, just a mishmash that went together there. That's all the only thing that I have left to say about it here. I wanted to like it, and I couldn't. It wouldn't let me.
I agree with you. I had a hard time with it. I mean, I like the cast. I like Clooney. I couldn't find myself to like it. It was very difficult. I completely agree with that. The last thing that I also want to touch on real fast as far as my final thoughts is that I would highly recommend, if you like listening to movie soundtracks, I've listened to two of them a lot recently, and one of those is being the Inside Llewyn Davis soundtrack. Which is now up on Spotify, the whole thing is. And it's incredible. It's very, very good. I could spend all day listening to it. I absolutely love it. And the other one is the film I was just talking about, The Broken Circle Breakdown. I'm not a huge fan of bluegrass, but I love the soundtrack. It's very good. So if you like bluegrass, you'll love the soundtrack. So I definitely wanted to throw that out there as well. And go USA. Beat Russia. So that's my final thought.
Started and leave on that there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, be sure and go see RoboCop. Come back and hang out with us next week, and we'll see you guys next time on the In Session Film Podcast.
What about Nonstop, though?
Nonstop? I want an action thriller wherein a U.S. Marshal has to solve a murder mystery and clear his own name, all whilst flying on an airplane 40,000 feet above the Atlantic Ocean.
What about Nonstop, though?
Nonstop. starring the sexy and mysterious Julianne Moore, and also starring the one and only Liam Neeson. I'm gonna break it down and I kept talking about Liam Neeson's. What about Nonstop Though? Come on. That's a green lollipop. That's delicious and nutritious.
Take it.
How you gonna be on a plane getting a text message? What's going on, Marshall? I'm gonna kill somebody every 20 minutes. Did I get your attention now, Marshall? Come on, Flush.
I am not hijacking this plane.
I am trying to save it.
What about monsters, though?
Excuse me. Could one of you get my car, please?
You Liam Neeson's?
Yes. Yep, I am.
Liam Neeson's from Tooken?
Yeah.
You are the Liam Neeson's from the Grays with all the wolves and you falling off of cliffs and it being arctic cold and whatnot?
Yeah.
Liam Neeson's from the upcoming picture. Nonstop.
That's right.
Oh, get your gun, man. Oh, no, my gun. There's your gun. Oh, no, the cabin is no longer pressurized. Where's my gun? Oh, watch. Oh, no, I'm Liam Neeson. This is a slow motion.
What?
I'm flying through the air. What's
happening? Plane crash!
I'll intimidate.
Liam Neeson is my chance!
Hello? Good. Anyone get my car, please?
I've got a plane to catch.
A take to the camera?
A tie-in with the movie?
Liam Neeson's in Nonstop is...
My shit!